The following program is produced and furnished in conjunction with Sean Kelly, who is entirely responsible for its content.
Welcome to Cyber Chat with Sean Kelly, former CISO at EPA and former Deputy CIO at Veterans Affairs on Federal News Radio, part of the Federal News Network. Cyber Chat, where government leaders come to discuss the hottest cyber topics affecting us today. Now your host, Sean Kelly.
Today we're going to be talking to Mr. Daryl Peek, Senior Manager for Strategy at Salesforce. Daryl, in a few minutes I'll be talking to Congressman Hurd about a variety of issues. The MGT Act and how that's going, the new CIO bill that was passed that he led and I think he got unanimous support for. But let's talk for a couple of minutes. You've now entered the private sector, and you have. So what's been going on with you? What's going on with Salesforce?
You know, it's a lot of great things that are happening, and really, it's a centralization of focus on the citizen and understanding the citizen experience. A lot of times, when we look at services that are being provided to the citizens, we're not necessarily getting all the feedback we need. One of the things that I'm learning and being in private sector and working at Salesforce is that that feedback is critical. Because how do we know the services and the features that we're delivering are effective for our citizens, are useful for our citizens? Right now, we have a population where it's more mobile. So are we mobile enabled with some of the legacy applications that we have, as well as when we have a multitude of applications that are dependent upon our information, how are we pulling that together and how are we maintaining the trust that is needed to ensure that the citizen is happy with our services?
Yeah, and how do you think that changes the way you used to think when you were inside the government?
Well, the changes are a focus on the employee experience and making sure that the employee has a voice, but also being able to have transparency across the board. I believe transparency actually helps in better communicating some of the needs and actually enhancing that diversity that sometimes is missing when you only have a dictatorial or more specific conversation.
So as we go down there, and that's part of what we're going to talk about with Congressman Hurd is, how do we make the services that government gives better for not only the employees, but the citizens that use those services?
Right. I think it all starts with the citizen. It all starts with that journey. How do they get to that end product? And if you think about it, when you get a license from the DMV, at the end of the day, you want a license.
We really want to use that as starting with the citizens process? I think we picked the wrong agency, Daryl.
Well, you know, and one of the things that we are seeing as well is some of our contact centers that we're seeing in some of the agencies, specifically in DHS, and how we are actually having a better contact experience. How do we get better self-service? How do we use bots in order to maintain or answer questions without having to go in different directions, as well as how do we actually enhance the help desk or contact center agent to be able to provide the right question the right time and reduce the time to resolution?
You know, I'm very familiar with the Salesforce platform, and I think it's a great platform. You guys recently had a huge acquisition in MuleSoft. What does that bring to that platform?
It brings a significant amount of the power of integration. A lot of times when we come to the table, it's usually a platform base, but usually I talk about platform exploitation. So how do you leverage some of the legacy applications that are not currently connected and interconnected, giving you that data-driven decision-making, making sure that you have all the data so you can aggregate it in order to come up with a comprehensive solution or a comprehensive answer?
One of the things that I used to use Salesforce was getting rid of legacy applications, right?
Trying to figure out, and
more in particular, legacy databases, you know, and that people were using to track this or figure out this. And we had a lot of success with that within the VA and in specialized administrations. You know, one of the things that I plan on talking with Congressman Hurd about is the MGT Act.
Yes. And
you know, that's about, what, a year and a half now old.
About that.
It's gone through an iteration of its process.
Right.
How do you think it's going?
I think it's going very well. And what I'm seeing is a lot of proposals coming from agencies that are now starting to challenge, how do we use the Working Capital Fund more effectively? How do we modernize certain aspects of our legacy infrastructure? And also, how do we modernize through utilizing cloud platforms or cloud native platforms? One of the things that we are seeing is a lowering of the barrier of entry. When you're able to adopt and maintain a lot of the power, ping, and pipe that typically is associated with the data center inside of some of these cloud services, now you're elevating your conversation. So how do you get the high-value work? It is by utilizing things like the TMF or the Technology Modernization Fund in order to move towards some of those ideal outcomes your agency is trying to achieve. But associated to that is the COEs that have taken place, specifically in USDA and now working towards HUD, and how they're going to be able to leverage the information from that discovery phase in order to make more informed decisions in how to use the TMF more effectively, like we've seen with USDA.
Got you. In you know, what we've said and I've said many times is that paying back those funds, you know, is or, Absolutely. You know, giving it back so that those funds can be reinvested right. is a huge part of this, right? How do you think that's going to happen in the near future? And how quickly can it happen?
I think it comes down to more effective accounting. As you start to build out your spend plan and as you start to look at your budget formulation, you have to be able to account for that payback period. So therefore, if you are achieving the savings that you are aiming to achieve, then you are being able to now allocate that money towards payback. But also seeing where are other opportunities to scale, to go from now a siloed or more specific use case to now an enterprise use case, which essentially is where you get your greatest savings.
Now, Daryl, you were a big agency. You were DHS, and I was with VA, but then with EPA. Can, you know, and this is all personal opinion, but do you think the smaller agencies can compete with those bigger agencies for these kind of funds?
It's going to be difficult. I think that they looking at a crowd approach where the agencies are collectively working together. An example that we've seen this with is the CDM program. Mm-hmm. When there were larger agencies that were able to make big purchases. However, the smaller agencies came together as a group and were able to leverage it as a shared service. So as we start looking at shared services, I believe that the smallest can come up with a comprehensive proposal.
And do you see that the federal government is starting to accept shared services in cloud and going to the cloud more often now?
I'm starting to see it across the board. I'm starting to see more interest in how to leverage these cloud service providers and being able to say, how do I lower the barrier of entry so that this way I can start focusing on more strategic and more tactical aspects of my agency? One thing that I'm starting and really excited about is some of the efforts that are going on in improving case management, improving grants management, improving loan processing, improving contact centers, being able to get to that improvement so that this way they have more satisfaction on the back end, which we weren't really caring about as much before, but now is really top of priority, especially with the IDEA Act that just went through.
Now, you mentioned CDM, and recently, you know, Congressman Hurd, through a huge bipartisan support, got the CIO bill through. Tell me what your thoughts on that are.
Well, leadership has to start from the top. So being able to empower the federal CIO in order to make those critical decisions and start to show other federal CIOs how to work comprehensively together, especially naming the federal CISO as well, I think that that's going to be comprehensive. But also just giving them the empowerment for them to really start to harness some of this great legislation, great guidance that is coming out, and technology. Really excited about what happened with Cloud Smart, how they're starting to elevate the conversation, what's coming up with the TIC guidance, as well as the Data Center Consolidation Optimization Initiative, DCOI. So it's really exciting to see what's going to happen, and Suzette has been really leading the charge and showing great leadership as a federal CIO.
And do you think that the agency CISOs will see a benefit from this?
I believe that the agency CISOs have been really moving in the right direction. So, for instance, the CISO Council released the CISO Handbook, which is actually very helpful for a lot of CISOs to now aggregate all the different information coming from NIST, coming from DHS, coming from other sources together. So I believe that CISOs will now be able to now work with their federal CIO in order to, or agency CIO, in order to do their jobs more effectively.
And it gives a lot more responsibility, but a lot more accountability and control of their environments.
Absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely.
And so, you know, as we look at this, and Congressman Hurd has been really big on, you know, a cyber national guard and trying to bring that on board. He's been on board with the MGT Act. He's now with the CIO bill. And he's kind of put an example or roadmap together that bipartisan support can get behind these type of issues.
Right.
You know, in the federal sector, where do you think that we need the next set of guidance? Where do we need to go next to help our past colleagues?
Well, it comes down to how to effectively govern and lead in this space. And really what we're starting to see is that there's more of a need for a comprehensive leadership approach towards implementing all these different activities and tools and initiatives, being able to aggregate through analytics. And getting more towards data-driven decision-making is actually going to be something that agencies will be able to move to in order to start to make better decisions across the board. I think also from an acquisition perspective, There's a lot of need for acquisitions because the way technology has been moving, we now have to shift the way that we done our more traditional acquisitions to a more streamlined approach. So we're starting to see things like OTAs, commercial solution openings, and other mechanisms that help us pilot and do proof of concepts in a faster clip than we traditionally have done.
Daryl Peek, Senior Manager for Strategy at Salesforce. I just want to thank you for coming on. We're about to have a really good interview with Congressman Hurd, and I appreciate you opening up the panel for me.
Thank you very much, Sean.
Thanks, Daryl. I appreciate you.
WFED Washington. WTOP FM HD2 Washington. WTOP FM HD2 Braddock Heights Frederick. Federal News Radio is now Federal News Network. We're the news organization of record for the federal community. We talk to federal managers, contractors, and policymakers about the federal workforce, pay, benefits, and retirement issues, federal management and acquisition, the Defense Department, and federal IT. Listen to Your Turn with Mike Causey, On DOD with Jared Serbu, and Ask the CIO with Jason Miller. Federal News Network is nonpartisan and nonpolitical, and our job is to help you, the federal government and contracting executive, make better decisions. Nights and weekends, we air Washington Nationals, Capitals, and Wizards, George Washington Colonials, and the Navy Midshipmen on the Washington, D.C. home of Navy Athletics. Tell Alexa to play Federal News Network. Follow us on Twitter and LinkedIn. Find us on Podcast One. Like us on Facebook. Our mission is helping you meet your mission. Federal News Network.
Today I'm speaking with Congressman Will Hurd, Republican from Texas from the 23rd Congressional District. Congressman, thank you for joining me today.
Hey, it's always a pleasure to be on.
Sir, so you won re-election, and you've been able to get the cyber bill through unanimously. It's been a pretty good month.
You know, it has. A lot of people think bipartisanship is dead in Washington, D.C., but it's not. And we were able to pass a bill unanimously, in essence, on strengthening the federal CIO, Chief Information Officer. This is important to make sure one person's in charge of ensuring all the agencies and departments are following the right procedures to have good digital hygiene.
So is this kind of the map, or the map for success next year? Is these kind of transportation, infrastructure, cyber, is this how we can see things can move forward next year in the election as we move forward with the new Congress?
So I've gotten, I think every bill I've almost introduced has been signed into law. I've gotten 14, 15 pieces actually signed into law, more actually passed the House. And it is the only way you get things done is by doing it in a bipartisan way. That's what I've tried to do. The only way you get big things done is being done in a bipartisan way. And so I'm going to continue to operate that way. And in divided Congress and divided government, it's even more reason for us to try to get things done. I think the real takeaway from the 2018 election was that the American people actually want us to get things done. They sent people to Washington, D.C. to do things, not just to burn it down. And I think there's issues like cybersecurity, a lot of these technology issues, that can be done in a bipartisan way. As you said, transportation is one of them. So I hope that we're able to get some things done in the new year.
I agree, sir. So, sir, you were huge with the passing of the MGT Act. And we now, since the last time we talked, this has now had some time to go through a process. It's gone through one iteration. How are you feeling about it, and how are you feeling about the progress so far?
Well, shocker, there are folks that are involved in these agencies that are trying to prevent CIOs from having this authority. And for those that don't know, MGT, Modernizing Government Technology, in essence, said that if a CIO saves money by modernizing their technology and their software, that money that they save can be put in a working capital fund, and the CIO can have access to that for 3 years. It also created Technology Management Fund, which is a centralized fund to help agencies that don't currently have a culture of modernization kind of kickstart those activities. And a number of agencies have set it up, the CIOs have set it up, but what we are starting to hear is the general counsels for a number of agencies are saying that they don't have the authority, the CIO doesn't have authority to move money into those funds, which, you know, the intent of Congress was pretty clear. And I think, again, this is an example of power grabs by procurement officers and CFOs to prevent, they don't want any of their power to go away. The CIOs need this tool in order to make sure that they can defend our digital infrastructure. And we're working on implementing language to fast forward this process. So we're going to continue to shine a light on this issue. And it's something I know the CIOs want to have, and we're going to make sure this gets implemented.
And so we've talked in the past about, you know, different acquisition vehicles and some of the ways that hampered IT spending, you know, LPTA contracts. And I know you've been a proponent of best value and making sure that we could get the services that are needed to actually improve government services. So I appreciate that. You also had a huge initiative for the Cyber National Guard. How is that going?
Yeah, the Cyber National Guard is an idea that if you're a kid and you want to go to college and you want to do something that around cybersecurity, we're going to find you some scholarship money. And once you finish that program, you're going to commit that same number of years you got a scholarship to working in the federal government, but not at NSA or DOD, but at the Census Bureau, at HHS, at places that require folks with cybersecurity skills and a skill set. And then once you are done with your time, completing that time, and you go work in the private sector is going to agree to loan you back into the federal government for, you know, 20 man days a year.
Go ahead.
No, and the idea is to you know, increase the level of collaboration between the public and private sector. You have that kind of back and forth, I think will be valuable. Where we are right now, you know, there's a program within the National Science Foundation called Scholarship for Service. And this is a program that is a great program right now, but it's primarily focused on master's and PhD students. Well, in order to have the pipeline of cyber professionals that we need to increase the number of folks going into undergraduate or two-year programs or certificate programs in order to bump up the throughput of cyber warriors. And growing a program like that is a significant cost associated with that, so trying to find offsets to do that is something that we have been working on and a problem we're going to have to solve. And then ultimately, the one issue that has thwarted so many people, the issue of security clearances. So let's say you come in and you're working at DHS, your time is up, and you're going to go work for a private sector company, and you want to come back and help DHS, you still need to have that security clearance. So who holds the clearance? Does it go to the company? Does it go to the individual? It's bureaucratic things like that we're having to iron out. One of the biggest things that frustrate me is how we handle clearances in the government, especially when it comes to IT jobs. It's frustrating, but that's something that we're trying to iron out. But we're going to continue to push and work on this.
Sir, do you think the consolidation under the DOD umbrella will help with that process as they move forward?
I don't know, to be honest. I think this is more of a cultural thing on who should be having security clearances, what for, should there be different kinds of clearances depending on who, on what you're doing. It's something that I think is important to rethink, and I think it's something that when we look at classification of cybersecurity information, you know, plans and intentions of advanced persistent threats and things like that, that stuff is so perishable, but we overly classify it, which prevents sharing of that information to people that could be using it to defend their digital infrastructure. So these are closely related, and it's something that we're working with the Financial Services ICE Information Sharing and Analysis Center to try to streamline this process so that we can increase the number of folks that have the clearances in order to work. Because the reality is this: if we think the public sector can defend the American digital infrastructure on its own, or that the private sector can defend it on its own, that's the equivalent of the French thinking the Maginot Line is going to defend them from the Germans. We've got to be able to work together. And we're trying to deal with the bureaucracy and the inertia of the bureaucracy to make this work.
My guest today is Congressman Will Hurd from the 23rd Congressional District. I am Sean Kelly, and this is Cyber Chat on Federal News Radio, part of the Federal News Network. How are we doing, sir?
Doing great.
Okay, we'll go in. How about going into a little VA, EHR, and stuff like
okay,
that?
Perfect.
Okay. Welcome back to Cyber Chat on Federal News Radio, part of the Federal News Network. My guest today is Congressman Will Hurd from the 23rd Congressional District. Sir, you know, back in my VA days, you were a huge proponent of VA and the EHR and bringing DHA together with them to under one umbrella. That seems like it's becoming a reality.
It does, and the same problems back then exist now, is how do you ensure that the old records are transformed over to the new system? The fact that the VA and DOD are going to be using the same system is great for all the people that transition when this new system is implemented. But for the hundreds of thousands of people that are under the old system, you still have to transfer that information from one system to another. That is always the part that has been difficult for the VA and DOD to crack. One of the hearings that I held earlier, I think it may have been last year, when asked how long is this project going to take, it was said 10 years and $10 billion. And there is no question to which the answer is 10 years and $10 billion. This is about mapping data from one system to another, and it should be done. We should be able to accomplish this at speed. There's been a lot of talk about EHRs at Medicare and Medicaid and how that information is being able to be opened up to the individual and to own their kind of information. I haven't seen, I've heard the stories about how that's working. I haven't seen it for myself to see if HHS is really being able to address the problem of making sure an individual has access to all of their data. If they've been able to do it, then that's lessons learned that can be helpful with VA and DOD. And just imagine this, that if you had HHS, VA, DOD being able to solve the interoperability problem, that is probably almost 65 to 75% of all the electronic health records in the country. And so that would get us to a point where true interoperability of electronic healthcare records can be achieved. And this would be a case where the federal government is leading on something important like this.
No, and I agree with you, sir. Is part of it complex or made more complex by the huge amount of legacy applications that are in all those systems?
100% it is. And finally, somebody broke the real problem down. So it's not like, when you have Microsoft Word, right, everybody has the same version.
Agreed.
You may have version 1, and then when it upgrades to version 2, not everybody is going to upgrade to version 2. Some people are going to stay at 1, but all the people that have 1. The way the VA grew their health records, their EHR system, was that maybe one VA hospital made a tweak to the electronic health record and to the system that only was there at that one hospital. And then somebody else at another hospital in another part of the country made changes in a different way. So there was no standardization of all of the applications that were being used within the VA. Therefore, the data is not standardized. And so because nobody knows all of the different kinds of versions that's happened, that has what made this data transformation project so difficult, is because you're potentially dealing with tens of thousands of different versions of a software, and nobody knows, the changes from the version number 1 to version 10,000. So that is what is taking so much time in trying to standardize all this information, which is crazy that we've gotten to this point.
Well, and also, too, it takes a robust infrastructure to support that system. And I'm not sure that we in the government institutions are totally ready for that infrastructure upgrade before we even start to implement the record.
You're absolutely right on that. And then if you have old, archaic data sets and how that information is stored, you're not able to take advantage of artificial intelligence or machine learning in order to do things with the data that would be ultimately helpful for the customer and help improve health decisions for the customer, because you have all that data. And why is what's called the longitudinal electronic health record so important? It's that if I have all of the information for every time I've gone to the doctor, the next time I go to the next doctor, if he or she is able to see all that information, they can make better decisions on how to keep me healthy. And then you can anonymize a lot of this data, aggregate it, see what's happening in a broader group of people that will help extend the life of someone because of the analysis that you're using. So that's why this effort is so important in order to do. Oh, and by the way, when one of our soldiers, sailor, airman, or marine leaves DOD, they shouldn't be told to print out your electronic health record and carry it to the next VA hospital that you see. It's 2018. You should be able to do that with the push of a button.
It is. And so is the answer that when we start to build our modern systems, we just start building them in the cloud and move everything to the cloud. I mean, we're a security show, and we want to make sure that we can automate, we can configuration management, we can have change control, we can have all those things. But what is your thought? Is that the answer?
It is. It is. It's and it's not just... It is not just moving to the cloud, right? The cloud is the latest thing, and it makes the most sense. But what is next after the cloud? So you have to have an ability that and a culture within these organizations of modernization, having an ability to be agile and to move and evolve, to take advantage of the newest thing that could save us money and increase efficiency and provide a better digital-facing service to our customers or the American people. So the fact that we many of these agencies don't have this mentality, and because you don't just modernize once. It's a constant process. The technological change we're going to see over the next 40 years is going to make the last 40 years look insignificant. NASA just landed that latest rover on Mars. The first satellite that left our solar system only had its onboard memory was 40 kilobytes. Right? Like that's like a Word document, and we're still getting information back from that. That was 41 years ago. So we just need to make sure that we're always creating our systems that can be modernized and evolve.
So I know we only have a couple of minutes. You have to run to a vote. What are your priorities going into 2019? What do we expect to hear from Congressman Will Hurd?
My priorities is to make sure that we continue with our FITARA scorecard, and you know what we're looking at, and making sure that the 24 large agencies and departments are following efforts to have good digital hygiene. Making sure that Department of Homeland Security, the new cybersecurity entity, has all the authorities that we deemed it from Congress. And then also for me, it's working on a artificial national plan, excuse me, an artificial intelligence a national plan. 18 countries have one, 5 are developing it, and we are not, the U.S. is not one of them. We have to make sure our research is complementary between the public and the private sector. We need to make sure we're thinking about how do we train the next AI researchers? How do we ensure that our workforce is prepared for a world of AI? Because whoever gets the AI first and whoever is able to master this tool is going to master the world, and we need to be first.
My guest today has been Congressman Will Hurd, Republican from Texas from the 23rd Congressional District. I am Sean Kelly. Thank you for listening. You can keep up on the latest cybersecurity news at cyberchatnews.com. You can follow me on Twitter at Mr. Sean Kelly. We'll see you next time.
You've been listening to CyberChat with Sean Kelly on Federal News Radio, part of the Federal News Network. Tune in Friday mornings at 10:30 or subscribe to this show on iTunes or Podcast One.